This is the Jazz Rocks Podcast, where the past, present, and future of jazz fusion lives. Here are musician and radio personality Tom Alexander and author and musicologist Walter Koloski.
Welcome to the Jazz Rocks Podcast. My name is Tom Alexander, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend and podcast partner, Walter Koloski. Hey, Walter.
Hi, Tom. We have part two of our interview with John McLaughlin for this podcast number 22.
Yes, sir. Very much looking forward to part two. Part one was great. We had a lot of listeners and a lot of wonderful feedback.
We are recording this podcast during the pandemic of COVID-19, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that we give our best wishes and hopes to everybody out there to stay as safe as they possibly can. Also, of course, a lot of people are losing income, and this is especially true in the artist community of musicians and the people that support them and the restaurants that may offer them, roadies, everybody. Everybody's going to suffer through this, and I'm hopeful that our show today can fill a little time while we're in our homes, just hoping for the best, but doing what we should be doing, which I know is what you're doing, which is basically staying home as much as you possibly can.
Yes.
So that we don't risk ourselves and our neighbors and fellow citizens. We just have to do that.
Yes, agreed. It's absolutely critical. Everybody does their part, and hopefully, the more people that do their part and play by the rules, if you will, the quicker this ends and we can move on and get through. We're all, this is the first time in modern history, really, that the entire planet has been we're all in it together. No one is untouched by this. So everything you said, I couldn't agree with more. And music is a big part of it. It's a big healer, as we all know. We all love music. We all love fusion. We all love our favorite artists like John McLaughlin and all our guys. And it's they're going to help. This music's going to help us, and we're going to try to help them too.
This conversation with John was great. We talked about John Coltrane and Miles Davis, and you offered a question that was a little unusual.
Yeah.
Which I think people are really going to enjoy. You're going to hear a different type of John McLaughlin toward the end of that question.
Yeah.
And of course, a lot of things have changed since we spoke to John. We will refer to those after we hear from John. So after these words, we're going to hear part two of our interview with the great John McLaughlin.
This is Jerry Goodman, and you're listening to the Jazz Rocks Podcast with Tom Alexander and Walter Koloski.
Trio Electrique, E. Dr. Smith, Zen Drum and Effects, Ido Castro Woodhouse, Bass and Effects, Michelle Walder, violin and effects. Get the shock of the Trio Electrique at the Edgetone Bandcamp page. Trio Electrique.
In Jazz Rocks podcast number 21, we talked to John McLaughlin about live performance. As in all great discussions, we went off on some worthwhile tangents. On one of these, John talked about what John Coltrane meant to him musically and what Miles meant to him musically and personally.
I've lived with Coltrane since when did I first hear him? 16, I must have been on Milestones. The Miles album came out in 58.
Yeah.
But I mean, when I say I live with him, you know, I've analyzed his music. I've listened to some albums. I've lost count of how many times. But just let's say A Love Supreme, which came out in 65. It came out in Europe in 65.
Yeah.
And I listened to that album. The first time I listened to that album, I said, what is he doing? What is he doing? What is this music he's playing? It went so far over my head. But God bless him, what he put this kind of poem on the back of the album, the LP, which has become, quite famous now, as famous as the album, in which he thanks God for the blessings of his music and just like everything is coming from God, everything is going to God, and only blessings are. And I don't know it verbatim, but the poem had a very profound effect on me because I was already beginning to look at, to walk the path of awakening. Let's put it like that. In any event, I knew the music corresponded absolutely to the poem on the back of the album, only I was incapable of hearing it. And so in that year, 1965 to 1966, I don't remember how many times, maybe twice a day, three times a day, I was playing that record. And it took me over a year before I finally heard. I understood musically.
It's interesting, John, that you were living your music real time while fans like Tom and I discovered your music, and it had us going backward in time to try to find out what music was informing what you were doing. We had to try and get the foundations.
Well, because you're the younger generation.
You know, notice he didn't say young. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah.
I mean,
my hips would disagree with you, but that's okay.
Okay. No, but Miles and Coltrane, they were the generation above. I mean, no, not a full generation, because I think Miles was born in 27. I was born in 42. So the 37, that's like 15 years. I think Coltrane was born around the same time, mid 20s.
Yeah.
In any event, I considered them my elders,
yes.
Simply because of their wonderful nobility of spirit and fantastic, wonderful musicianship. Because the minute I heard Milestones with Miles and Coltrane and that school, that whole modal school that Miles created, I knew that was for me. I knew from the very first moment I heard that album that this was my music. This was my school. And so I followed them both arduously throughout their careers. And of course, I was miraculously found myself in a position where Miles adopted me, if I may say, because in a way he did adopt me. And he took me in his band. Even though I was playing, when I arrived in early 69 in New York, I was playing with Miles within 48 hours of arrival. I mean, if that's not a miracle, I don't know what is. But, and it wasn't just that, I mean, thanks God I passed that baptism of fire which in a silent way was for me. And somehow he found it, maybe because he could feel how much I revered him. And he took me under his wing, and he actually, because of Miles, I survived. I mean, financially, let me put it like that, because every time I see him, he'd stuff $100 bill in my pocket. Just make sure you eat, you know, make sure you pay your rent. And he was just marvelous to me. So, of course, I never had that with Coltrane, because he passed away in 67, which was the year prior to my arriving in America.
There's more with John McLaughlin in a moment.
The latest from the Deep Energy Orchestra is called Return, featuring Jason Everett with Trey Gunn, Fareed Hawk, Phil Hershey, Silva Ganesh Vinayakram, E. Doc Smith. Fall into the world grooves of the Deep Energy Orchestra. Return is available at the Deep Energy Orchestra Band Camp page.
John, you have a new album out with Zakir Hussain and Shankar Mahadevan. Is this so?
Is this so? Yes, it is so. Yes, it is. Indeed.
The story goes, John, that for about 7 years or so, you've been thinking about this new concept. There was something you were hearing in Shankar's voice, along with the sound of instrumentation, that triggered some unique ideas that you and Shankar shared.
Yes, well, you know, Shankar, you remember Shakti, it was known as Remember Shakti, but it was still Shakti for me, was reborn around 1997, and we came out in 98 with the wonderful young Srinivas on mandolin. But by the end of 99, I was really looking for a singer to join the band. I was talking to Zaki one day, and he was in India, and I said, you know, because we were really the only two members of the original Shakti band of the 70s, and I told him of this desire, and he said, I think it's a wonderful idea. He said, I'm in South India, and I've heard of this guy called Shankar Mahadevan, he said, I'm going to speak to him and ask him to send you a CD, a demo CD, like an audition CD. And I got the CD. And I have to say, about a minute after I was listening to the CD, I was on the phone to Shankar because it was so astonishing. And to make a long story short, I invited him to do this tour that Zaki and I put together, but it was only in India. We did a tour of India with a lot of musicians with whom we had not played, well, particularly me. We did a tour. We were about 15 musicians, and Shankar became part of that tour. At the end of the tour, and I spoke to Zakir, and I said, I absolutely want Shankar to be a permanent part of Shakti, which he became. And so We began touring, and on hearing his voice many years ago, already more than 6 years ago, my approach to the Shakti group was to bring harmony into it. I restricted myself to the notes of the raga, but perhaps bending the rules a little bit. But then I finally had the idea I wanted to harmonize Shankar's voice, but abandon all the Indian rules and even abandon Western rules. that I would just take his voice and harmonize it in my way, in my Western way. In any event, so it began just as an experiment. But the first trial, we were so thrilled. I'd done about 30 seconds, 45 seconds of a bhajan, which is a devotional song, Indian song. And I was thrilled already when I'd done it. And I sent it to Shankar and I said, "What do you think?" And he called me back and he said, "Amos, I have tears in my eyes." He said, "It's so marvelous. We really have to continue." Okay, so here we are 6 years later, primarily because he's a very busy guy. Since 2000, when he started playing with us permanently, he became probably the king of Bollywood. And one aspect of that is he sold over 200 million recordings.
Oh, my God.
So this is an indication of how much he's really loved in India. Okay, they've got 1.3 billion people, but even so, 200 million people, that's wow. that's a big chunk of the population. So, and I have been touring and working myself. Finally, we got it together. And it's a shining light in my life, this recording. I will never be able to thank him enough that and he says the same to me. It's because it's so different from anything he's done and from anything I've done that what we've done is really build a new bridge between the East and the West. That's actually a new concept in the way we can meet each other. And so presumably you've heard a few, minute or two from, I don't know if you've heard, I know they were on, I think Sovi put them on the net.
Yeah, there was one sample, very beautiful, and of course want to hear the rest.
Yes, it's very important that you do hear the rest. And we do realize that we'll probably sell about 14 copies of this because it's not everybody's cup of tea, as they say in Britain, nevertheless, I feel that if, whether you're from the East or from the West, if we can abandon, let go of our preconceived notions about how a song should be sung, and even how a song should be structured, because we all have these from growing up and listening to music all our lives, we've developed notions about how things should be, structure, how a song should be sung. And we all have our preferences. And if we can let go of those, both East and West, then I think you will grasp really the beauty from the depths of the emotion, because the depths of the emotion on this album are truly deep. And I think the beauty can be heard and can be felt and seen because it's there. So we live in the hope that some people will. But that said, in a way, we just hope. And if they don't, it's too bad, because we do, you know. And we've listened to the recording, and we both wept.
Wow.
So that's just an indication of our own particular feelings. Okay, so we're directly involved. So, of course, our emotions are involved and our heart and soul are involved. But hopefully, because of what we've spoken, what I've spoken about about the act of playing and the act of listening. And for even in a concert, the act of listening is a very intimate act because it's very personal. And the act of playing is very intimate. But thank God it's intimate because if it was impersonal, it wouldn't touch us, would it? It has to be intimate. And it has to be just you and yourself with your trousers down by your ankles, just, you know, letting go and playing and being who you are and having faith that all of that's inside, the because we are all born with beauty and bliss and joy. And of course, there's tragedy in life. But if you tell me that you could take those tragedies away from my life, I would say, no, thank you. They are my tragedies, which might sound strange, but they are the salt in my life. And they will, they are all part of my life experience, which is what comes out in the music.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's true. And in this record, the record is very intimate. It's deeply personal. But I think so much the better, because I would hate to be impersonal, frankly. You know, what I'm talking now about to you is very personal. You know, yeah. And so, but that's what makes life lovely, is when things are personal.
You'll have the conclusion of our conversation with John McLaughlin right after these words.
Tom and I have been asked over and over again, when is the Jazz Rocks podcast going to be properly archived so we can go back and listen to some old shows? Well, the answer is now. You can now go to archive.org. That's archive.org. Type Jazz Rocks Podcast into the search box, and there you will find interviews with Jan Hammer, Dennis Chambers, Scott Henderson, Steve Kahn, Narda Michael Walden, and many other legendary and contemporary stars. Special features, too. That's the Jazz Rocks Podcast at archive.org.
This is Mark Wingfield, saluting you from England. You're listening to the Jazz Rocks Podcast with Tom Alexander and Walter Koloski.
You know, an observation I've made about hearing you, speaking with you, and just having heard interviews in the past, you know, you have a very special voice, and I mean that in a literal sense. You know, you were born in Britain, but if I think, you know, they were going to create an international voice, a universal voice of somebody speaking English that captured the world, it would be yours, because it really has that sound of a global citizen, someone who's lived and traveled many places, and there's no real clear-cut place. It's the world. Can you comment on that?
Well, probably because I've lived in so many different places, my accent has been affected, and I'm very sensitive to where I live, to my environment, yeah. and even my family have noticed this. You know, for example, we have Italian friends, and they say, you know, your voice changes when you speak into this Italian. I say, va bene, è molto bene, mi piace molto parlare italiano. Not that I'm speaking. I mean, I can get by in Italian, But of course, I grew up as a Francophile with French language and French culture. And I'm married to a German lady for 25 years, and they're all wonderful cultures. And last but not least, my real and profound love and affection for your country, which has had the most profound effect on me, more than any other country, because of your music. Since I picked up the guitar and I first heard Big Bill Brunzi and then Muddy Waters when I was 11 years old. And the story really began from there. So, I mean, when I was living in New York, I mean, you know, it's very easy to get a Brooklyn accent, you know what I'm saying? But I love accents. I like the Scottish accent. That's a really very, very dear to me, because that's where my clan comes from, you know what I'm saying, Jimmy? You know, so all of these accents, they're all musical to me.
Yeah.
They're all music. Whenever I hear, and I'm hearing my Indian friend, they're talking like this and that and that, and and they call me Janji, and because that's the way, that's the only way they address me. And it's all beautiful music. All languages and music. But what's fantastic about language is it is music in a way, and the way you can get into a kind of culture's mind is through the language. And this is fascinating. And I regret my British countrymen, most of whom are monophonic. And because I know English people who lived in the south of France for over 20 years, and they still don't speak French. And I say, why? You're missing out on so much. There's a kind of linguistic hegemony, if I can say that, with the English language, because it is now. It's the language that of the language of the internet. It's the language of computer programs, isn't it?
It certainly is. Esperanto didn't catch on, apparently.
What a shame. My mom spoke Esperanto.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, she was a real multinationalist. Yes, she was.
Huh.
And that was my brothers too, because they were the ones that infected me with Francophilia. I mean, already when I was 3 years old, and I was starting to learn to count, they you have to say it in French, not just English.
We.
Okay.
Truce is the latest album from touch guitar pioneer Marcus Reuter. For years, this Moon June Records artist has been expanding the vocabulary of stringed instruments. Truce is no exception. In fact, the music you will hear was unplanned and totally spontaneous, created in the moment by Marcus, bassist Fabio Trentini, and percussionist Asaf Circus. Improvisation in its most pure form. Truce from Marcus Reuter. Available at moonjunerecords.com. MarcusReuter.com, also available in a 5.1 download. Truce from Marcus Reuter.
Hi, I'm Tony Levin of Stickman and Levin Brothers. You are listening to the Jazz Rocks podcast with Tom Alexander and Walter Koloski.
We wrap things up now on the Jazz Rocks podcast, along with Walter Koloski. I'm Tom Alexander. And Walter, just a wonderful interview with the great John McLaughlin.
Fantastic conversation, I thought. And you to hear John McLaughlin doing impressions of is something you generally don't hear. And We heard quite a variety of countries coming from the man there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's been everywhere. So, you know, I mean, I don't. Is there a country he hasn't visited in his 50 years of making music, 50 plus years of making music? I don't know.
A few years ago, a few years ago, I did ask him that, and he had mentioned three countries. I believe he's been to two since, but I don't remember the other one.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he'll try to find a way.
Yeah. Now he is the world traveler. He is the ambassador of music of the planet.
Now, since that interview, a lot of things have happened, obviously.
Yeah.
And we're dealing with this terrible virus. And since that interview, John, Shankar, Zakir, and the people at Abstract Logics Records have made John's new album and their new album, Is That So?, available as a free download at the Abstract Logics website.
Yes.
ABSTRACTLOGIX.com. It is the type of music that is going to soothe you, and we are going to end our program with a piece of that music.
Yes, we are going to hear the track Kabir featuring John Shankar and Zakir. And the album is That So? We thank you so much for listening. Stay well, stay safe. We'll see you next time on the Jazz Rocks podcast. For Walter Koloski, I'm Tom Alexander. So long, everyone.
Bande main to tere paas main to tere paas main moko kahan dhoonde re bande तेरे पास में रे बंदे मैं तो तेरे पास में ना तीरत में ना मूरत में ना रे बंदे मैं तो तेरे पास में कहीं प्राण में नहीं पिंड में ना ब्रह्मांड आकाश में तेरे पास में रे बंदे मैं तो तेरे पास में खोजी हो तुरत मिल जाऊं एक पल की तलाश में खोजी हो तुरत मिल जाऊं एक पल की तलाश में कहत कबीर सुनो भाई साधो मैं बंदे मैं तो तेरे पास में मैं तो तेरे पास में मैं तो तेरे पास
This has been the Jazz Rocks Podcast with Tom Alexander and Walter Koloski. Tom Alexander is a jazz musician and voiceover artist based in Miami, Florida. Walter Koloski is a music journalist and historian who lives just outside of Boston. The Jazz Rocks Podcast is produced by Alexander Productions. This program was recorded at Studio Alpha in Miami and can be heard on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can follow the Jazz Rocks Podcast on Twitter at JazzRocksPC and on Facebook at the Jazz Rock Fusion page. If you wish to advertise on the Jazz Rocks Podcast or make any inquiry of Tom or Walter, please email us at info@alexanderproductions.com.